Well, good afternoon. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, June 7th, 2016, and our scheduled guest for today is Ben Fulford. And I've been trying to get a hold of Ben Fulford now for about 10 minutes, and he ain't picking up yet. So the phone or the Skype is ringing. I will continue to try, and we will carry on with these things. We will continue to just trudge forward. Meanwhile, I've got a couple of comments in the meantime. I was watching the news this morning. Now that I get the Icon TV beta site, I've been watching a lot of news, and I am just shocked at how. The major media, that the CIA-controlled major media, as we know, is all over promoting Hillary Clinton as the presumed nominee for the Democrats. What are they going to do if she gets indicted? Well, first of all, she's not going to get indicted. Obama is coming out and showing his support for her already. So I think he's probably going to overrule his own Justice Department and overrule the FBI, in which case, if that happens,
Hello?
Hey, Ben Fulford, how are you?
Good. Sorry, I slept in slightly. Here I am.
You know what? No worries. Do you need to take like a minute or three and go make yourself a cup of coffee?
I've already done that.
All right, good deal. Good deal. So are you up? Are you awake enough to begin?
Yes.
So how you been? What's new? I mean, we did that interview a week ago last Thursday, and we had a tough time recording it at the time, and then the recordings were all corrupted once we got them. So do you have your recorder on now?
Yes, I do.
Good. Let's leave that on so that we've got systems in place that we're going to get this thing recorded. We're going to get it posted in a number of places so that we can't let the bad guys interfere. That's kind of what happens. But that was a tough interview to record because of all the technical difficulties that not only was Brett having, I was having, you were having. It was pretty uncanny how all three of us seemed to have issues at one time or another during the process of recording.
Yeah,
that interview.
I was told at one point there was like at least 53 different government agencies monitoring my computer.
Well, you're popular. Just how it is. You are popular. Anyway, and not only that, but you're popular with government agencies, but people like to read your stuff. And so, why don't we start over again where we left off last week? A couple of deadlines have come and gone. There's new deadlines coming up with this whole negotiation between the Dragon family and the Rothschild representative. What's the current status?
Well, the current status is that a relative of Baron Jacob Nathaniel Rothschild, who my own sources tell me is the actual head of the Khazarian Mafia now, was supposed to have met with someone we sent in New York last night, or I guess today, your time. It's still the 7th there, right?
Yes, it is.
But I haven't yet gotten a report from that meeting, so I don't know yet. Unfortunately, I'll find out in a few hours' time. But right now, I don't know the status. However, what I do know is that these people are no longer hidden; they're no longer behind the curtain, and we know who they are. So, for example, if you look at who owns The Economist. Who controls it? You see, it's the Agnelli family and it's the Rothschild family. And the Agnellis, through separate investigations on the following the Chiasso incident, which you recall in June of 2009, two Japanese were arrested with carrying $134 billion worth of bonds, and the bonds were taken. They were taken illegally, but anyway. The Vatican P2 Lodge sent a man called Daniel Del Bosco to try to cash the bonds, and he was followed around. And he went first to the Senate finance committee to try to cash them, and they said they couldn't do it. And he went to the Chinese government, and they said they couldn't do it. And finally, Ban Ki-moon of the United Nations came out and said, look, we want you to just, we'll pay you $100 million to go away. And then the trail led to the Agnelli brothers of Fiat, I guess, and then to the Italian king, Victor D'Amelio. He's not the king anymore, but would have been if they had not abolished the monarchy there. And that whole crew, but it also, so we have that independent verification. But then if you look at the what The Economist says in its opinion columns, you can see it's the exact agenda of the European branch of the Khazarian mafia, and you know they were split into two big factions. There was the Nazi fascist faction around the bushes that really did want to start a new world order and World War III and kill 90% of the world's population in order to get rid of the useless eaters and save the environment. You know, the people who wrote the Georgia Guidestones. Now, they have been stopped from everything I hear. The problem is that the people who stopped them, this is like we had a mutual enemy, which was these people who wanted to kill 90% of humanity and start a fascist world government, and they were stopped. But now what's happened is that the global warming faction, with the moderate faction, says, all right, now we're going to take over the world, and we're going to do this global warming thing, which is just it's scientific nonsense. I mean, I've said repeatedly what their real purpose is to set up a carbon tax to create to finance a world government. And the good part about what they're trying to do is that they want to pay developing countries to, you know, reforest. That's fine, but you don't have to lie about it. You don't have to say, you know, make up a big story. And then distort science in order to accomplish this, which is unfortunately what they've been doing. And also, the other point is that we now find out that the United States has gone bankrupt. They went bankrupt on May 2nd when Puerto Rico defaulted on a bond payment. And now, apparently, the United States is under the receivership of the United Nations Corporation, which, it turns out, is controlled by this Jacob Nathaniel Rothschild. So what is that? I mean, why? Who chose this person to be in charge of everything? I didn't. I don't think anybody did. They just historically had it, and we need to change this.
Well, we do. And, you know, I've got a question here from one of our listeners out there wanting a little bit of a difference, wanting to understand the difference between the Rothschild faction and the Nazi faction. They want to know, you know, what are the dividing lines? Where are they? How do we tell one from the other? Because when you're at the ground level, like, you know, the little people are, we are, they all look the same.
Well, I mean, the big thing, the real obvious one was in the 2000 election, with Al Gore versus George Bush Jr., where, for example, you had France and Germany and stuff opposed to the invasion of Iraq and all that stuff. And you had, I guess you had Tony Blair going along with it, and Junichiro Koizumi in Japan going along with it, and George Bush going along with it. So you could see that at that point, there was you could see quite clearly the two factions split at that election, and the Nazi faction, who wanted to, you know, invade the Middle East and grab all the world's oil and then start World War III, won. They gained power, and then they tried very hard to. They built biological weapons factories. They tried to spread bird flu and then SARS. Ebola, you know.
Yeah, I remember being in the Beijing airport and just walking through the airport. They had these monitors up there, were heat sensors. If you had a fever, it picked you out of the crowd.
Yeah, it happened to me in Tokyo Airport, too. But the point was that SARS was genetically selective. It only hit Asians. And you recall in the Project for a New American Century put out by the neocons, they had written there that biological weapons that target specific ethnic groups would be a useful political tool, in their own words. And then they did it. So So they were caught trying to murder, you know, 90% of the world. And they have yet to be arrested. They've been removed from power, for sure. You see that most of for example, Mike Hayden from the formerly NSA, all those people are out of power now. The Bushes are out. Donald Rumsfeld's out. Dick Cheney's out. You know, all the people who signed that document are out. So you can see that faction has lost power. However, what's happening now is that the more moderate faction, if you want to call it, is taking over control, and they still want to have their family mafia run the world in secret. They don't want to. We had a mutual enemy, but now they're saying, "Hey, now we're in charge. Now we're in control, and we're going to do this global warming thing, and that's that." But again, it's not something that's based on true science or open debate or transparent, you know, decision making. It's still done in secret by an inbred family group. It's just that
it's that top down management. So it is because we say it is.
Yes. So and now. What's happened is that the sort of military-industrial complex faction that was controlled by the neocons is now behind Donald Trump, and they've given up on their plans. You know, the wackos who want to start World War III have been removed. So I'd say that the reformed military-industrial complex, the people who, you know, they got rid of their Nazis and their plans for World War III, and they're now trying to, you know, rebuild the United States, are circling the wagons around Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton is the Rothschild candidate, and the fallback, in case Clinton is removed, is Joe Biden. But again, you know, we have an electronic election that's rigged anyway, and the corruption is so rife that it's not something that can be fixed without, you know, a total reboot of the system, in my belief.
Another thing on this, you know, where does the Rockefeller faction fit in? Are they aligned with the Rothschilds? Are they aligned with the Nazis? You know, let's.
Or I both. Would say, well, when I interviewed David Rockefeller and asked him, he said both, right? So. At that time, that's what it says in the horse's mouth, right?
He said, I'm a company man. I don't care who the boss is. I work for the company.
and I think right now the Rockefellers sort of were in control of the U.S. military-industrial complex, and they had a split. I know for sure with the Saxe-Gotha Rothschild family complex. You can see this. Because in World War One, at the end of World War One, the Rockefellers who financed the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. We know this because it was a ship financed by them was detained in Canada, full of Lenin and all the Bolsheviks, and it was in a Canadian magazine, Maclean, saying, "Yeah, you know, the Rockefellers, these people are financing radical revolutionaries in Russia," but they were forced to let the boat go, and the Russian Revolution went ahead, and what happened was the Tsar was removed, and the Tsar was a cousin of the British King at the time and the Kaiser. So you can see that a senior member of the Saxe-Gotha family was removed. Now, the story we all hear is that they were all killed. However, what I heard directly from a member of the Saxe-Gotha family is that they were, in their words, reabsorbed, whatever that means. I assume they were given new names and removed and some, but I don't know the story, but that's what I was told. In any case, you can see very clearly that Rockefeller then got the oil interests in Russia as part of his payoff for supporting the revolution there. And during the Cold War, David Rockefeller would fly back and forth between the Soviet Union and the West like a big VIP in either place. And it was clearly they were in charge of the Cold War, that whole military thing. But my understanding is that George Bush Sr. kind of took over as the main power broker behind the scenes after like 1985 or so when he became vice president. And I think now what's happened is that the Rockefellers have allied with the Rothschilds, and they're circling the wagons, saying, "Look, you know, we had our internal split, but now we Khazarian mobsters have to circle the wagons. We have to unite because otherwise the unwashed masses are going to take over, and we're going to lose our ancient privileges of running the planet and controlling the sheeple." That's my understanding of it.
You know, that sounds about spot on. So, you know, our issue as the little people here, we have to fight them, you know, hammer and tong, and you know, take them out of power regardless, no matter what it takes. So, but yeah. You know, what about, so anyway, we covered there's going to be an economic reset. You know, that's kind of what the conditions are, the preconditions are from the Dragon family. What is this going to look like? When are we going to see it? We've been hearing about this for a while, and people are getting kind of anxious. We just saw a very, very dismal jobs report in the USA, and we also look at there never has been a recovery since the 2007 meltdown, actually. I mean, they're trying to paper it over with bogus metrics for the economy, but it's, like I said, bogus metrics.
Yeah, no, they've been lying, and the essence of the problems, I keep repeating, is that the interests of the United States dollar and the people who produce that dollar are not the same as the interests of the United States people and the United States economy. Now, here's the problem, is that about 90% of the dollars that were ever created are not owned by Americans anymore. You know, for example, when, you know, Russia sells diamonds to England or something, they get paid in dollars, and they keep the dollars in their account. And so a lot of, and the Chinese have been putting all these trinkets in boxes for decades and getting paid in dollars. And these people do not want these dollars to suddenly lose half their value.
No.
And so that whole system requires the dollar to stay at its present value, and the people who control that system have the interest in keeping the dollar going. However, it's totally devastating for the real U.S. economy, because when the U.S. dollar became the world standard currency, the U.S. was about 50% of world GDP, and now they're down to like 16%, and the dollar's interests are no longer the same as the interests of the U.S. economy. Now, normally what people would say is that what the United States needs to do is issue a new currency. Or they, you know, ideally they want to devalue the dollar by 50%. But they can't do that because everybody owns the dollar, so we're not going to let these lose value. But they have to issue a new currency. That's the bottom line. And the new currency would lose about 50% of its purchasing power compared to the U.S. dollar. Now, what that would mean for people in the United States would be a sudden sharp shock, in the sense that almost everything in Walmart would double in price overnight, and your gasoline costs will go up a bit. But the flip side is that suddenly U.S. industry would be competitive again. You'd start exporting like crazy because you could suddenly beat the Chinese on price and quality, which you already beat them on quality, but they could beat them on price too. And you'd have a huge influx of tourists and investment dollars. And the other thing is that the government would, if the government took control of the process of creating currency, they could spend unlimited amounts of their new currency inside the U.S. For example, you could start with a no-brainer, a massive campaign to rebuild your highway and bridge infrastructure and everything else that's decrepit. You could spend a huge amount on R&D and schools, and, you know what I mean? You'd have unlimited funds if they were properly spent.
Okay. Well, what I see with that, I see a couple of pitfalls there. You named one of them. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, the buying power for the American worker is going to be cut in half.
You know, that's yes and no. I mean, the domestic stuff will not change, and it'll actually increase jobs.
Well, it will, but there is no infrastructure left in the U.S. You know, the semiconductor industry moved overseas. It doesn't live in the U.S. anymore. Those wafer fabs that used to be here that created the electronics industry in total are all in China now. They're Mexico, mostly in China, but they're not here. And so the skill set to retool that industry is pretty much dissipated at this point in time. There's not that many people around who have the expertise to build a state-of-the-art wafer fab from the ground up. And so it would be very painful. And the same thing goes, I'll give you another example, a company called Canton Drop Forge. It's the only drop forge left in the entire country. These things don't exist in the USA anymore. They're all gone.
Well, I think that you'd be able to get, if the U.S. was, the market was competitive again, you'd be able to get various Asians to build in the United States. I mean, that's what they did in the 80s with the car industry. They said to Toyota and Honda and all those Japanese people, look, you're going to have to start building your cars in the United States if you want to sell in the U.S. market. And that's what they did. And you can do the same with semiconductors and everything else. You say, look, you know, we need to rebuild our industry and infrastructure. And you, the card you can say is, otherwise we'll cut you off the U.S. market. They are dependent on it. You know, it's a weird thing that on the one hand they have the U.S. has a huge deficit. On the other hand, the Asians depend on the U.S. market for a lot of their business. So a deal can be reached where that would involve rebuilding the U.S. infrastructure. You know, that can be done. That can be negotiated.
Well, the other pitfall I see for the American people is that if you've got all these dollars that live overseas, and they know there's a devaluation coming, they're going to come to the U.S. and start buying up hard assets, real estate, infrastructure assets, whether it's the waterworks or the power company. They're going to start putting their money into those things, which is going to drive real estate prices through the roof here. The American people can barely afford housing as it is. It's going to really, really hurt, the man on the street.
I think that there's ways you can deal with that. One is that you can put restrictions on real estate investment by, for example, absentee owners should not be allowed. So people who actually want to live in a place can buy it. Otherwise, no. That cuts out a lot of the speculation in the housing market. Now, as far as the rest of it goes, you cannot take infrastructure out of the United States, a lot of it. I mean, you cannot remove real estate.
If you bought 40,000 acres of farmland in Nebraska to grow wheat and corn, you can't move it. But these are the type of things that all the produce from those areas is not going to be available to Americans anymore. It's going to go overseas.
Well, again, there are ways to control that. I mean, you can say, look, it's fine to export food, but not if it's going to be starving Americans. Now, the other thing we need to understand, and this is very important, is that you have to look at the ownership of the Fortune 500 companies. And if you analyze it, these are the corporations that moved everything to China. And if you analyze their ownership structure, you'll find that there's a few funds like Vanguard and Blackstone, State Street and Banking. And if you examine the ownership of these groups, you'll find it's that same old Rothschild, Rockefeller, Nexus, who are using these funds, these foundations, whatever, to disguise their ownership. But that is right now the reason why the stock market is going up, even though the economy is going down and profits are going down, is because this family group is using their money creation monopoly to increase their ownership of all listed companies. They're buying it and buying it and buying it. They're using their printing press to increase their ownership of every listed company, and they're doing it through fraud. And this is something that, because it's fraudulently obtained, it can be confiscated. And I sincerely think the United States and the new government needs to look into the ownership of the Fortune 500 and those people who were not legitimate entrepreneurs, but who gained their ownership through banking fraud, should have that confiscated. It should be put into a fund managed on behalf of the people of the United States, or else, well, I don't think redistributing it to the people of the United States would work, because it'll all end up back in the same people's hands. There'll be a little boom, and then boom, the same people back in charge. But I think the point is that if you take that fraudulently obtained ownership of the Fortune 500 and you give it back to the people, You're going to have right away about the equivalent of $500,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States to hand out. And that's legitimate stuff. I'm not talking communism. I'm talking about returning stolen assets.
Well, you're talking about, you know, there's no statute of limitation on fraud.
Yeah.
So, you know, fraud, you can go back to, you know, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, go all the way back to there.
Yes.
And you can what they do is the term is claw back the assets that were gained by fraud.
Yeah, and again, it's just a small group of people if you really look down on it. I mean, just, you know, I've said it before, but when I first started this, you get an old who's who, and they're in all the libraries. They can't destroy all the copies. And find out all the names of the descendants of the seven families that started up the Federal Reserve Board, you confiscate their assets. For example, David Zuckerberg of Facebook, who's controlling everybody's private information, is the grandson of David Rockefeller. And he didn't get control of Facebook because he was some sort of boy genius entrepreneur. No. He muscled in on that, and then they took it over. And this is the sort of gangster control at a very high level that the United States needs to end.
That's the reality that we have to deal with here in this country, and that's just, you know, the how things are. But on a more direct and concrete question, we've got real world economic indicators that are outside of the U.S., like the Baltic Dry Index. What will it take to get this to recover to a level that indicates, you know, health for the global economy?
Well, there needs to be a consensus on what to do next. And right now, everything's split. There's a kind of a war of attrition going on, which the United States and the Khazarian mafia who run them, you know, have been losing. And the Europeans have also, they already threw in with the Chinese and joined the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. But what it's going to take is a decision to reboot the entire global financial system. And once you do that, and that means sharing properly the rulership of the planet, which is not being done now. This Khazarian family mafia does not want to hand over their absolute control of the UN and everything else they control behind the scenes. That's the essence of the problem. But in a properly run world, the Chinese would get their fair share of control. They're 20% of the world's population. They deserve 20% of the control. They don't have that right now. People in India, Africa, South America, all these places need to have a fair share of running this planet in a transparent manner, according to their GDP and population. Then, like I said, once the sort of the new architecture is rebuilt in a more realistic manner, you know, in accordance with the actual true nature of this planet and not in accordance with the interests of a small family group, once that's done, it's possible to spend literally thousands of times what the World Bank budget is on developing the planet. The Chinese have come up with a plan for $50 trillion global energy grid, for example. That's thousands of times more than the World Bank budget. People I've talked to have a big plan to turn the deserts green and replenish the oceans with fish, explore the universe, build artificial planets. The Chinese also are talking about building a huge global infrastructure of communications. And right now, you know, the idiots running the U.S. economy went to China for a meeting and say, well, you have too much steel production. You're going to have to cut back on your steel production because you're making too much of it. Well, no. Well, say, all right, you've got all this steel production. Let's use it. Let's build bridges around the world. Let's build huge tunnels connecting everything. Let's you know, really revamp this planet.
Let's modernize the planet. is really what. So you go ahead.
Yeah, but the entire paradigm that these people are using, this central bank debt, and this talk about, you know, who controls the global debt facility and who's the M1 who's in charge of global debt, you know, well, no, it's the real thing is credit, okay? It's not it's the people who actually earn money who have the right to lend it, not the people who create money out of nothing and use that as a sort of control of debt slavery system, which is what the system is now in the West. They create money out of nothing, and then they give it to governments and people and corporations as debt that has to be paid to them.
Whereas they'll give the principal, but they don't create the money to repay the interest. So what that is, that results from generation to generation is more and more wealth is consolidated in fewer hands using that model.
Yeah, and it's led to destruction of the world ecosystem. We've wiped out 50% or almost of sea creatures in the past century, and 40% of land creatures. That's directly as a result of the Federal Reserve Board debt-based financial system. It basically enslaves everybody and says you have to rip stuff out of the environment to pay us back. So it's inherently parasitical. And you can see this in the incredible increase in wealth disparity. So we have a situation where 62 individuals have more assets than the poorest 3.5 billion people on this planet. And again, I'm not talking socialism or communism where everybody gets an equal income no matter how much work they do or how much they create. But you do need a one-off redistribution, a jubilee, a write-off of all debt and a redistribution of assets to reboot the system. It's a one-off thing. After that, everybody is going to have to earn their own money, and people who lose it will end up poor again, but that's their fault. But right now, it's just too rigged. It's too distorted. And, analysis of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire make it quite clear that it was an income disparity, the concentration of all the wealth in a few tiny hands that destroyed the Western Roman Empire. And the same thing's happened to the United States now. The exact same thing.
Well, we were doing much better. It began in 1964 when U.S. used to have an asset-based set of currencies. We had silver coinage. Mm-hmm. In 1964, they ended silver coinage and started replacing it with these other metals, these baser metals. Then whenever Nixon took us off the gold standard, that was the end of our asset-based currency. And we went to an entirely debt-based currency. This economy peaked at around 1970, 72. And ever since then, earning power, buying power for the American public has gone down the tubes. I mean, it's lost a great deal of its value.
Yeah, but they've lied about it with their statistics. By manipulating the inflation data, they manipulate everything else. They say, our GDP is bigger, everything's great. But the reality is, as you say, people have been getting poorer and poorer. It used to be a guy working in a General Motors factory could have a house, a car, and a wife who could devote herself full-time to rearing children without worrying about finances. And now, both parents have to work and put their kids in institutions, to indoctrinate them while they're busy working, slaving away, and paying taxes to this mafia. It's a ridiculous system. And it's not something that we can just tinker with. It has to be fundamentally rebooted. And there is talk of doing that. There's talk about a global currency reset and stuff, but I don't think the current plans are viable ones. But there are various factions pushing for this. And part of the problem seems to be a lack of consensus over who should be in charge.
Well, that's true. We really do live on an abundant planet, but we're not managing it very well. A few minutes ago, you made a comment about the true nature of our planet. What is the true nature of our planet? What's your vision on this?
Well, we have basically infinite abundance, but we need to start with a very fundamental principle, which is this, that we did not create ourselves. Something else created us. So there is a creator. Now, you can call it God or nature. I don't think that matters that much. But the way to respect the creator is to respect the creation. That means that we need to start as a basis that everything that exists now should be built upon, not destroyed. Whereas the model of the monotheistic religions has been God gave us this to just exploit and use and rape and grab and eat and do whatever we want with. No, we're supposed to build upon the creation, not destroy it, which is what we're doing now. That's the fundamental point. And you can set up systems so that companies can actually make profits from protecting nature. You can set up tax incentives so that, for example, medical companies actually make money by making people healthy instead of spreading disease and killing them with pharmaceuticals. Which a lot of them do now, whether or not they intend to. With that as a base, if you have a proper meritocratic, transparent future planning mechanism for different countries, and this is a model that works so well for Asia, for Singapore, it's behind the fast Chinese growth for all these decades, is you have a future planning function in your government. And you did not have that in the United States and the West. It was controlled by a group of religious fanatics who were trying to start Armageddon or wait for the end of the world. It's just wacko, superstitious nonsense, and that's what they were planning for. They were actually trying to... we had this group of crazies trying to carry out sort of delusional end-of-world... fantasies written up in ancient and superstitious texts, instead of saying, all right, you know, we have a possibly infinite future with infinite abundance if we plan it right. So, you know, these religious fanatics are being removed from power, and that's great. The problem is that the only people who, in fact, now run the system are the ones who have the money printing press, and all they know how to do is pump out money and distribute it through their buddies, and that's not working, you know.
Well, one of the things you just mentioned here is the fact that the governments that are merit-based, you mentioned Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew did a great job structuring that economy down there. It's a little island 26 miles long. It's one of the most vibrant economies on the planet. The Chinese have done very well on a merit-based system, but we seem to be stuck in the West here on this this bloodline dynastic approach that you know, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of a retard the grandson is, he still gets the CEO job.
Well, I think George Bush Jr. is a great example.
Yeah,
I
mean, no kidding. He's dumber than dirt.
Yeah, and apparently he can't even write properly. He has a mental problem, and there he is, you know, supposedly president of the United States. He could not have gotten that through a proper talent-based system where the media wasn't manipulated, where elections weren't stolen. And now you've got a deal still with Hillary Clinton, who... you know, she's part of that whole mafia, for sure. I mean, Bill Clinton is the son of Winthrop Rockefeller. He's not some, you know, self-made guy from a single mother. No, he's a member of the Rockefeller clan. They change their names. They try to pretend that they're not. They've learned that trick, for example, Adolf Hitler. You know, he was supposedly an unemployed artist, but he was living in a mansion and had a driver at the time he was an unemployed artist. He was actually the son of the Kaiser and the Rothschild family, but they give him a new name, Adolf Hitler, and they make it seem like he's just a self-made man, because they know that people will resent self-appointed, inbred
messiahs. Rulers. Yeah. Well, you know, besides, Hitler sounds a lot better than Schnickelgruber, which was what his birth name was.
And then even that was fake, and then that's better than Rothschild, which would have led to, you know, an immediate sort of rejection, because...
you know, the beer hall putsch would have never occurred if his name was Rothschild.
Yeah. So. Now, it's an interesting point, and here's something I think that the Chinese have, you know, they've had a bigger population and more interaction over a longer period of time. So I think they've come up with a better system. But what the Chinese have done is that the old royal families lurk in the background. And they still have considerable economic power. But they reached a decision that the actual day-to-day running of the country would be through a meritocratic party of self-made people. So they come up with a good compromise where these old dynastic families stay in the background as a long-term safety mechanism and as sort of guardian elders, but the day-to-day running of the meritocracy, through, you know, whereas they are the long-term safety mechanism. And I think we can take these old families, these old bloodline families, who have thousands of years of knowledge of how to run a planet, and use them as advisors and as the long-term sort of guardians, but not day-to-day managers, because they haven't been good at that.
Well, let's talk about that, because, you know, one of the trends in the modern economy is to go to what they call expert systems. And, you know, if I was a brew meister and I had a way of brewing, you know, exceptionally good beer, I would have an army of people around me watching everything I did, watching how I adjust the blend of hops versus grain and this and that, and the age and everything else to go with it, until they had all the knowledge out of me and they could automate that process and produce a consistent product that was as good or even better than what I would make as a brewmeister. How come we can't do that same thing, have expert systems with these bloodline families who allegedly know how to run a planet?
Because it's not the experts who run things, unfortunately. I think a case in point is Bill Gates. Now, the story put out, and I was surprised, the International Opinion Poll saw him as one of the most respected people on the planet. But, you know, his father was very close to the Watson family. He was the principal manager, I believe. And Bill Gates married Melinda Watson, heiress to this whole IBM fortune. And as a marriage gift, they gave him a monopoly over this operating system. And but the story is that no, he was a high school dropout, or no, university dropout who built Microsoft from scratch, and now what's he doing? He's out using his fortune to spread vaccines. I think it's a mixed thing what he's trying to do. I mean, on the one hand he's trying to control a population, on the other hand he's sincerely fighting disease. But the point is, he never really deserved that job. He was given to him, it was stolen from IBM shareholders. It was done in a crooked way. He's not a self-made man. He's just another bloodline heir, you know?
Well, if you know something about the history of Microsoft, the whole DOS operating system was stolen. it never belonged to Microsoft in the first place, and it was gotten by fraudulent means, if you will. The same with the access to the mouse. That was a Xerox
sure.
product. Xerox developed that.
Yeah, same with Facebook, you know, same with a lot of this stuff. So, you know, when you have crooks in charge, the problem with the system now is that the fundamental operating principle, I think, is the profit motive. And the profit motive boils down to more for me and more for the owners. And if you look at the owners, you find a tiny, tiny group of people who have more than they could spend in a thousand lifetimes already, wanting more and more and more and more, and sort of like a very primitive system. I mean, it's no different from the operating system of an amoeba. You know, it's I must gather and eat for myself, and the hell with everything else, you know? And that's not the way you run a planet. We need to have, at the very highest level, saying, all right, our main purpose as a species is to make this planet better for all living creatures, including human beings. That has to be the basic starting point. And then if you do that, and then you have a very open system where people say, well, this is what works, this is what doesn't work, this guy did a great job, let's move him up, you know. It needs to be done in a way that everybody can see, and when they can see who rises to the top, why they got there, and they can either agree with it, or they can try to climb up and take them down and replace them. Either way. But right now, the system is so rigged that it's a few inbred families running on the greed principle who run the whole show. And that's destroying the planet, as
you see, all the evidence. You've just articulated what they call the Chicago School of Economics, which is taught in every business school in the U.S. and probably everyone around the world. And that is the most important directive for any CEO or any corporate officer is to increase shareholder value at the expense of everything else. Doesn't matter about labor, doesn't matter about the environment, doesn't matter about the local community. How do you increase shareholder value? And that is the overriding mandate. And until we revamp what's taught in our business schools, we're going to get more of the same.
Yeah, and shareholder value, if you look at who the shareholders are, it's like, you know, Kazarian mafia interests, basically. So the Japanese, Matsushita Konosuke, the founder of Panasonic, had a better idea. He says the company is it's the customers, the employees, and the shareholders. It's a balance between the three. And that's a much healthier system to have. But even then, I think he's missing the natural environment, which needs to be put in there too. And, you know, again, you can change the incentives so that, for example, the New York skyline could be turned green with a slight change in incentives. So if you grow, you know, vines on the walls of your building, your tax bill will go down. And suddenly, instead of this concrete sort of gray mass, you have a green, vibrant sort of environment full of small animals flying around and stuff. These are the sort of things that can be done if we just change the incentives slightly. And that means, but at the end of the day, at the very top, we need changes. And these people are not going to go out quietly into that good night, as they themselves said. They're going to fight and kick and scream and do everything they can to stay in power. And that's something we're going to have to deal with, unfortunately. I mean, I'm hoping that they're going to realize that they need to come up with a Chinese-type solution where they can remain in the background, but they need to let the competent people of the day actually run things. And I hope that we got some good news from the meeting today or yesterday, my time, but I don't know yet. And if not, well, it's going to end up having to be rather violent. You know,
well, the question is do these dragon families, like the White Dragon Society you reference often in your writings, do they have the horsepower to actually engage in this Rothschild Khazarian mafia and bring it down?
They do, bottom line. Okay. And, you know, the question is, the people in, for example, the various martial arts societies and stuff, the basic principle is that you don't attack, you don't strike the first blow. You can only use it for self-defense, but a clear argument can be now made that they're trying to kill you and your family. This is legitimate self-defense. We have to act. And at a certain point, we will have no choice but to do that.
Well, that's a discussion I had on another radio show a few days back, was about, you know, Monsanto. Monsanto was poisoning the entire planet with glyphosate. Do we as a people have the right to defend ourselves by eliminating the board and top management of Monsanto because they're literally killing us, and they're killing our kids and our grandkids, and we won't have any if they keep up what they're doing? This is really a fundamental hypothetical question that needs to be asked, and everyone needs to ask it of themselves.
Yeah, and people around the government and people around the world have been taking action against Monsanto, and they are having to, you know, change their behavior as a result. So it is having some results already. It's just not enough yet to really do this properly. And you know, there are, at the highest levels in Asia, for example, the decision has been made years ago to take these people on, and it's been working. It's unfortunately, here's the thing that's so frustrating, is that on the one hand, the people controlling the West were full of these delusional end-of-the-world fantasies and wanted to start World War III, wanted to, you know, bring on Armageddon. And so you're fighting people who want to start World War III. And that means that if you start World War III to fight them, you play into their hands. So it's a frustrating process, but you have to slowly drain them of their money, of their control of information, and you have to slowly sort of make it impossible for them to even contemplate World War III before removing them. And that's been happening. There's been a purge of the U.S. military where all these end-of-world wackos have been removed. There has been a removal of all the neocons from the power structure. And it's a slow, frustrating process, but it's been underway, and you can see a lot of changes already. And the fact is, for example, when I started this, there was exactly one sentence in the entire internet referring to the Rothschilds. Now they're everywhere. Everybody knows their story. They're not hidden anymore. Same with all these other groups. And the other thing that nobody knew at the time was that the Federal Reserve Board was privately owned. Now I believe anybody who's actually mildly interested in current affairs is aware of this. So it's been frustratingly slow, but, you know, it's like a hostage situation. You have to, you know, make them sleepy and cut off their food and slowly break them down rather than give them an opportunity to sort of kill everybody under their control.
Well, there's an analogy I like to use. You know, World War III is kind of like a sledgehammer. And, you know, you hit something with the sledgehammer, breaks in a million pieces. That's what these wackos have wanted for a long time. But if you use a scalpel, you can, you know, cut things out pretty easily. And you know, one of the discussions that we had on the Lost interview, that's what we'll call it, was the fact that these dragon families will be issuing a deck of playing cards with certain people's, you know, face on them. And, you know, I'd like to see these decks of cards in every household. Mail one to every household on the planet. Put them in every, airport. Put them in every train terminal, but bus stations. Give these things out everywhere. Everybody can play cards and see who the bad guys are. If you come across one of them, here's who he is. Here's what they did. Here's what the reward money is going to be. Here's the bounty. If you bring them in, you know, cut off their heads and hands and bring them to us.
All right. Well, let's we can do that. We can offer 100 kilos of gold or a ton of gold, depending on the person, for pickup in Hong Kong. And I've got an agreement to let that happen. Now, we need to come up with a good list of people who are a real problem. I think it's not that hard, but we need to start with the visible ones, the ones who are in actual control right now, because that's what we can see forensically as being the power structure. And then from there, you have to work back to the puppet controllers behind them. So, for example, if you go after Janet Yellen, you'll end up with her bosses at the end of the day. But she's the mechanism they use. Same with Mario Draghi or the head of the European Central Bank or Kuroda running the Bank of Japan. They're the front men, and you've got to go after them to get to the real powers behind them. But then we also know a lot of the names that have come out, like, the Rockefeller family, the Morgan family, the Bush family, all of these families are, we know who they are. So we need to start working on a list. But I want to find out first if there's some sort of compromise coming from them. I should know later today. My source will probably talk to me about that in about a couple of hours.
Okay.
Find out what happened.
Keep me in the loop on this, because this is something that, the American people absolutely have an interest in and a need to know. And, we want to know. Which brings me, to another question. I said, really, are the Rothschilds themselves, are they the ultimate oligarch? Are they as big as they get? Or is there somebody beyond them? Something beyond them? I'll leave it open ended.
When I first came out with this talk of grabbing the top 1,000 people, and putting them in jail, a man called Michael Vandermeer came to meet me, and his former name was Michael Maring. He told me he was a cousin of the Queen, and he represented the family, is how he put it. And he told me that the Rothschilds weren't the ultimate power brokers, that it was the E2 Freemason Lodge in Italy. And I guess they sent Leo Zagami, who claimed that he was, groomed to be the head of the Freemason Lodge, to meet me. And they invited me to Italy, and I went to Italy, and he introduced me to a guy called Vincenzo Mazzaro. It's the highest person I know. He was like a cavalier in the Teutonic Knights. And these people say, okay, we run the Vatican and we're going to fire the Pope. And they did. So they showed that they had real power. But they said they worshipped something called the Black Sun that exists in the Gamma Rays. Okay? And that they get their orders sort of subconsciously from this entity. And my understanding is that that entity is no longer on this planet. Okay, so they were under some kind of psychic control. That's, again, what the forensic trail led me to. I actually went to Italy, and they tried to poison me. They showed me what they claimed. Well, I'll tell you, this is a kind of weird story, but they took me, Mazzara took me to cathedral in Milan, Italy, where the stained glass window was a black circle. And he said, that's our God. And when he did that, the whole room seemed to disappear. The whole cathedral disappeared. And I was like standing on the edge of a black, black, empty, life-sucking void. And I sort of pulled back, and then I was shown what looked like a black and white dynamo that was producing everything. Anyway, this is a very weird experience. All I can say is that what I explained to these people is that the world, I mean, what it seemed to show me is that the world is digital. You need to have, for example, a basic question of philosophy is, why does anything exist at all? And the answer is that something cannot exist unless there's nothing to contrast it. The reason why there's nothing, there's not nothing, is because nothing can exist without something, or zero and one. So there is, at a very basic level, we're living in a digital construct of some sort. And that is the fundamental problem we're dealing with, I think. But, you know, it gets weird. But having said that, right now we have a world that we can see, feel, touch, and we need to concentrate on that. So even though these people seem to be at the very highest level under control of some very mysterious forces, right now we are in charge. Objectively, it's us human beings who now have the control over this reality. We have de facto control. So, you know, these people need to forget about this weird esoteric stuff and concentrate on the here and now as a way to deal with it. And that means creating this planet as a better place, making this reality better. Right now, most people are finding virtual reality more attractive than real reality. And we need to change that.
Well, you know, did people gain this control because this this black sun entity, because it left, or did they gain control on by other means, other merit?
Well, what they told me, again, this is weird stuff. What they told me is that 26,000 years ago, they were the survivors of Atlantis, and 26,000 years ago, they were given special technology and told to run the world history according to a certain plot. And they used this, for example, they had the technology to cause storms, and they used other things like assassination, propaganda, control of the food supply to manage the world. And the story they told me was the plot ended in 2012, and they did not know what was going to happen next. That there was one group under, this would be what's now the global warming group, that wanted to start to have Prince William be the Messiah and start the new age there with Jerusalem as the world capital. And the other group, the Nazis, wanted to, you know, create a Nazi eco paradise by killing 90% of the world's population. But neither of these groups were going according to the ancient plot, and that the group who followed the ancient plot didn't know what was coming next. They were expecting something to come. And my answer is, look, never mind about alien entities. Let's do it ourselves. And that means, you know, deciding as a species what sort of future we want to build for this planet, public and openly.
Well, Ben, I have to clue you into something. You know, my theme music for this radio show is the Superman theme.
Right.
And the reason I chose that is because, hey, there ain't no Superman. Nobody's going to come save us. We have to save ourselves. Everybody's got to get up off the sofa and go do something. You know, that's the whole premise here. But behind that is the underlying premise of what I've been preaching on this radio show now for going on 6 years.
Okay, now there's another thing. I want to take a step back from all the mystical and weird stuff that you showed me and get back to the more concrete real world, where what we saw forensically, apart from their crazy beliefs in the Black Sun and stuff, and some very weird things that did happen, is that there has been a group that wanted to create a world government, a global Roman Empire, centrally controlled, and this is... The motto is Ab Chaos order out of chaos, and they're trying to build a centralized hierarchical world government, you know, controlled by the descendants of the Caesars. And this is the group that we ran into. These are the people who are causing all this Muslim Christian strife because they're trying to force the two. It's a Hegelian dialect, right? They force two groups to fight in order to create a predetermined result. In this case, a unified monotheism. So they're still at work. They're still actively causing trouble in the Middle East, promoting this Muslim-Christian strife to create their one world religion, their one world government, their one world centralized thing. They're still at it. But they're only able to really cause trouble now in the Middle East and Europe. Their whole paradigm for manipulating things is not working in Asia. They were unable to provoke fights between Japan and China, although they tried hard. They were unable to provoke wars between North Korea and whatever. They've been trying, but they just don't have the power to do so in this part of the world. But they're still causing this whole Muslim Christian artificial strife. And you know, I know that it's been going on so long that a lot of Americans think Muslims are the enemy. Look, the artificial Wahhab Muslim fundamentalist thing that these people are pushing is not Islam, okay?
Well, that's what I call the Wahhabist blasphemy.
Yeah, and so what people need to understand is that there's absolutely no need to fight Islam in its genuine Islam. And it's this these cabal finance crazies. They're deliberately set up as boogeymen in order to promote a fight. So this whole ISIS thing, which is, you know, the modern brand name for Al-Qaeda, is a boogeyman they're creating to try to promote fighting. At the same time, they are able to sell a lot of weapons and, you know, use fear to keep themselves in control. But essentially, they're really nasty people doing bad things for wrong-headed reasons. And they're still fighting over the oil money in the Middle East, and that's something that has to be fixed. They need to, you know... I mean, I think that one way to make this easier for people to understand is they force all the mercenaries in the Middle East to wear uniforms. So instead of calling them ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra, they can wear either a BP or a Shell or an ExxonMobil or a Gazprom uniform.
Yeah, they'll look like a bunch of NASCAR drivers or something.
And then we'll know what's really going on and who's, you know, and then we can go to the executives of Shell and BP and ExxonMobil and Gazprom and say, all right, you guys, you know, this is a world of peace. We're not going to, you know, the era of hiring thugs and mercenaries for business purposes is over. Now you guys are going to have to use courts of law to sue each other over who gets the rights to what oil, but no more giant mercenary armies. Unfortunately, what's happening now, what has been happening, which needs to be reversed ASAP, is that they've been draining the U.S. legitimate military of funds and using all this oil money to build these giant mercenary armies, which the United States Army alone was no longer able to deal with, and that's why they needed to get help from the Russians. And that situation has to be reversed, and I think it is being done so.
Well, how do we resolve this oil issue? You know, there are some technologies that are going to make this the oil thing somewhat passe and obsolete here pretty soon, but what do we do in the meantime?
Well, I think that we need to keep oil and hydrocarbons around. Let me explain why. For example, free energy, fusion, Okay? It produces lots of energy, which is a good thing, and for next to free. But energy alone can't do anything. It needs to be combined with matter. Now, what hydrocarbons produce is, as a byproduct, is carbon. And carbon is the basic building block of plants. And plant life combined with energy is what allows us to live. So what I suggest is that you have to set a system where the carbon is turned into plant life. We could turn this, you know, and again, you could turn the deserts green, the Arctic regions green, you could start building artificial planets. But the point is that we apparently have an almost infinite supply of this hydrocarbon, and it can...
Well, that's one of the things that people don't realize. We've been fed this this lie about peak oil. And it seems, you know, the last 48 months, the known global reserves of oil have increased by 40%, and this is an ongoing trend. It appears that oil regenerates itself in the ground.
Well, it also seems to be that this planet, you know, is kind of like a layer, and the deeper you go, the heavier the stuff is. So if you go to a certain depth, you'll get to the oil, the hydrocarbon layer. You know, above it is the water layer where we're on. And so if you drill deep enough, yeah, apparently there's practically infinite amounts of oil. That's they've done this in Vietnam, I believe. They did deep wells, and they found, yeah, if you dig deep enough, there's all the oil you want. So, well, then, you know, that's something that we can use to turn this planet into a paradise. You know, I think there's some no-brainers. For example, I believe everybody should have the right to have a comfortable house with a nearby swimming hole, for example, and nature around them, and yet all the stimulation of a big modern city. We can accomplish that. I mean, there's so much we can do. If we decide, all right, what sort of paradise we want to build, how are we going to build it, and then let the people who actually show themselves capable of accomplishing stuff be put in charge. We can do this. It's not that hard. The problem is not scientific. It's not technical. It's political. It's social. The current structures that we have of government are not up to the job. The current international institutions are not up to the job. I mean, the United Nations is a case in point. They haven't been able to stop war.
They haven't intended to stop war. You know, war is where the money is. Peace is not a profitable business. Now, if we retool the defense contractors from making war machines into making space exploration machines, then it becomes profitable again. You know, how do we go out and mine the asteroid belt, or how do we go out and get into the next to the next star system? How do we get there from here? What do we do?
Yeah, that's exactly what we need to do, and it means a high level political decision at the top, and that's where the problem is still. It's at the very top of the system that the problem is, and forensic evidence has shown that in the West now, with the fall of the Bush group, that it's Baron Jacob Nathaniel Rothschild is the bag holder for this group right now, at least for a large portion of it. The Agnelli family and Jelly and all those other P2 people are also, you know, still there and holding the bag. And they need to come out. We need to start talking. We need to get things happening.
Well, what would the plan look like? How do we get things happening? I mean, you know, guys like you and I can talk about this till the cows come home.
How do we
start the spark? How do we start a fire?
Okay, well, so say we've taken over control of the process of creating and distributing money, okay? And we link it to real world assets. It's not no longer a vacuum process made out of nothing. What we can then do is say, all right, here's what we have now. Here's an inventory of everything we have, and here's what we can build with it. And sort of put it to you can set up, for example, a real live internet-based system where you can get constant 24-hour feedback about, you know, what's working, what's not working. But my personal plan, the one I've been pushing, is that at least in the West, you can do what they've done in the East, and that is create a a future planning institution built from scratch with the most intelligent people on Earth who run in a transparent manner a process of planning the future and coming up with different plans and letting people vote on them. Saying, what do you want? What's more important? To turn the deserts green or for everyone to have a big house with a swimming pool? Or, but the immediate task is I've been promoting a campaign similar in scale to a world war, only this time the enemy would be poverty, environmental destruction, disease, ignorance, everything else that plagues this planet. So we start with that. Let's stop disease. Let's end disease. Let's end poverty. Let's stop environmental destruction. We got to stop the destruction before we start the building of something new. But the collective decision says, all right, let's do that, then we can do it. But right now, we don't have that. We have groups operating on selfish principles, trying to increase profit for themselves at the expense of everyone else. It's not a, and as the Asians keep saying, it's not a zero-sum situation where, you know, I win, you lose. No, we can all win. That's the problem. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to get started on. And it can be done.
Well, this is rethinking everything from the fundamental levels, and all of us have been inculcated to the paradigm that we're in. You know, how do we educate ourselves? How do we educate our kids? How do we educate everyone around us into this form, this manner of thinking?
Well, if it was a decision made at the highest level, then it is not very difficult to educate people. I mean, once that happens, you can change all the textbooks, you can change all the TV programs, everything else, and start telling people the truth. I mean, the truth shall set you free, as they say, as they say in the Bible, I guess. Once a new structure, a new sort of group at the top that's inclusive, we can then go public and say, all right, this is who's been running the planet, this is the situation now. This is what our plans are. This is what the future we want to build. You got to get everybody on board, and that means transparency. That means disclosure of information. That means letting people know the truth. When people are given accurate information, usually they make good choices. Right now, the problem is they're being told lies, so they make bad choices. They think, well, you know, we've got to fight ISIS or else they're going to kill us. And they say, oh, well, if that's the case, then we have to fight ISIS. But if you say, ISIS is a fake creation of oil companies and oligarchs designed to promote the war industry. And they say, well, let's get rid of the oligarchs so they don't do this anymore. So if you give people true information, they make good decisions. And so we need freedom of truth, freedom of press.
You just hit the nail on the head, and that is, you know, how can anyone make good decision based on bad data? Mm. And the lies we're told is nothing but bad data. So we're never going to make good decisions until we have good data. I mean, the quality of the decision is directly related to the quality of the data that you have to make your decision based on.
Yeah, and right now the U.S. economy is run on lies. It's basically lying about the true state of the economy while pumping money through a small group of oligarchs and insiders who use it to centralize their control of all listed companies, all production facilities. That's what's happening now. And it's certainly not for the benefit of the American people or the people of the planet.
Well, your earlier comment about how the people who control the dollar in the printing press have different interests than the people who live in this country, live in the USA, and live, you know, really on the whole planet, that one really hits the nail on the head. You know, how do we cause the interest to align? Instead of fighting these people, instead of having to, you know, to take them out, eliminate them somehow, you know, throw them out of power, how do we get their interest to align with ours?
What I tried at the very beginning to tell them is that they were killing the goose that laid the golden egg. That if you concentrate too much wealth in too few hands, you've got no customers. You've got no goose that lays the golden egg. You've got no source of profit. And you force these people who are impoverished into destroying and ripping away from nature just to survive. So if you make these people rich, you'll get way, way richer yourself than if you make them poor by taking all their stuff from them. So they need to understand that a jubilee and a write-off of debts and redistribution of assets would create the biggest boom we've seen in probably since the Industrial Revolution, and it'll probably be even bigger than that. And once they realize how much sort of potential has been deliberately kept from this planet, they'll say, oh, why didn't we think of this sooner? I mean, for example, when I said, we got to kill, and they tell me that they've got to kill the useless eaters, I said, no, they're like seeds waiting to become a jungle. They're like empty laptops that need to be filled with information and turned into game machines.
That's an interesting point. You know, one of my points that I've been advocating recently is that, you know, the greatest asset that any nation has is its human capital.
And right now, they've been, instead of trying to explore, develop this capital, they've been trying to dumb them down because they're fear of losing control. And so we have to kill them, we have to vaccinate them, we have to dumb them down, we have to, you know, hollow out the education system, anything to keep them as sheep. You can't let them wake up and realize that, you know, we've been running them like a big pig farm all these years, you know. And instead, I said, no, let them free. And you'll benefit yourself far more than you can imagine.
Well, you know, there's a lot of pressure out there for governments to come clean about, you know, the UFO issue, the disclosure issue, if you will. Let's just call it that. That would be the impetus, I think, to change the paradigm and the mindset of everyone on the planet. If they would just come clean on that one issue, all the other pieces would begin to fall into place.
Well, I think that issue boils down to what I said earlier about this planet being a digital construct, and that if that's the case, then a decision at the highest level means, if it's digital, it means we can build a whole new operating system. It means that we could, for example, have, yeah, an infinite amount of planets to explore and colonize, and everybody could have their equivalent of their own planet if we do this right. What I hear from these disclosure people, or the story they're telling, is that at several times in the past, members of our species have already gone out into the universe and colonized vast areas, and we're sort of like stuck in a weird 20th century or 21st century vortex, and they're trying to liberate us from this. Well, if they can do so, great. But again, I'm not waiting for a giant spaceship to come out of the sky and liberate us. I think we're going to have to do this ourselves. And the example I like to give was, there's this tribe in the Amazon. They're a very, you know, basic hunter-gatherer tribe. And one Brazilian government official contacted them and said, look, you know, we want to leave you as is, in the pristine nature. We're not, you know, we're not going to interfere with your lifestyle. We're going to let you continue to live in the jungle naked and catch stuff with your hands, because that's the natural thing. And they basically, though, they see these motorboats going by in the river, and they see all this stuff, and say, well, hey, we want to be part of that. So they killed this guy, and then they went out, you know, in public. They went to the riverbank. They said, here we are. We want to join your, you know, thing. We want to get in motorboats. We're sick and tired of running around the jungle naked, you know? So they themselves said, no, we want to get out of here. Now, some tribes wish to stay in the jungle. Fine, let them stay. And I think the same is with us. We're sick and tired of being stuck on this hellhole planet. We want something better. And I think there is a policy of non-interference, and we have to do it ourselves if we want to get out of this planet and into the universe.
Well, if there is a policy of non-interference, how do we determine what the benchmark is to where we progress enough to be accepted by these other civilizations, if they exist at all?
Well, the obvious benchmark is that we have to have world peace. I mean, we don't let tigers and lions roam around the cities because they kill and eat people, you know, if you leave
But we let human predators who do that, go run loose and go kill and eat people.
Exactly. So when we have a planet that's not united, and where war is still a common phenomenon, then they're not going to let us out. I mean, we're dangerous. We're killers. We're not civilized. We don't.
that would be like taking a tribe of headhunters and turning them loose in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah. So until we get world peace, they're not going to let us out. I wouldn't let us out. So we've got these dangerous mass murderers with high level military technology. And we just let them out as is into the universe. They're going to go around, raping and pillaging and killing, and we can't let that happen. And that's why I think we're being kept in quarantine on this planet.
Well, that's an excellent point, but the people who are at the top seem to like it that way. They would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Yeah, and there are groups that make all their money from the wars and until we, deal with them, and it's going to, ultimately speaking, look, any town has a police force that deals with crime, and any village has certain rules that everybody has to follow, and this planet, unfortunately, does not. We have a group of people who are operating outside of the system and who have access to vast amounts of arms, and we need to deal with those people. We need to crack down and the Forensic Trail has led to the P2 Freemason Lodge, their artificial stimulation of war between Christians and Muslims. We need to deal with these people. We need to go to the Agnellis and all these people, and we need to tell them, look, enough is enough. The game's over. We know who you are. Either you stop or we put you in jail or maybe kill you if necessary. It's going to come to that, at the end of the day. If they don't do it nicely, we're going to have to do it the hard way. And we're getting to that point, unfortunately.
Well, one of the things that I've said for a while here is that in order to defeat these people who profit off of the misery and suffering of others, is we're going to have to become more terrible than they are to end them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to fight us. They're and they've got resources. They've got people. They've got mercenary armies like we see in Syria right now.
Yeah, but like I said,
at their disposal.
It's highly concentrated. So, you don't fight the arm of the octopus. You go for the head. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to go for the very top. We're not going to bother with their men in black. Once their salary is cut off, you're out of it anyway.
They're just another unemployed schlub.
Yes, they'll be working as, bouncers in nightclubs or something.
if they can get that job, if they're lucky enough to get
But here's the other point. We need to offer it. We say, look, on the other hand, if you let us build this new system, we'll put you in charge of protecting endangered species and, stopping bandits. And, you become the good guys. And a lot of special forces are doing that now. They're out there protecting rhinoceroses and other endangered animals from poachers and, doing good work and getting paid well for it. And that's what we need to set a system up. So, we want to hire these guys to do good instead of hiring them to steal oil as they're doing now or to promote, a whack.
Well, I've been in touch with a group that that does exactly that. They're over in Africa and they're actually hunting the poachers.
That's
what they're doing. And these are former U.S. Special Forces guys, and they are active on the ground. And they love their work because they're doing good for the planet.
Yeah, well, they could send some people to stop the destruction of the Amazon, for example, and a lot of places where they're needed. We can also, like I say, if we are forced to put out bounties, there'll be some serious money to be made bounty hunting to get rid of these mass murderers, And not only will you do good and kill get rid of a mass murderer, but you'll help save the planet. I hope it doesn't come to that, but we're getting to that point. We're running out of patience, and everybody's sick and tired of this and going on forever and ever and ever,
Well, it is, and it's time for change. I know for the fact the American people are fatigued from the endless wars. I mean, we've had a situation going on now since World War I where the U.S. has been almost constantly embroiled in some conflict someplace or another. And it's taken generations of our best and brightest, most capable young men, and now these days young women, are being sent into combat roles, and many of them will not come home, or if they come home, they come home mangled or either physically or mentally.
And then what they do is they find the ones who are, wacko enough or have that sort of mean streak that are actually enjoy killing people, and hire them as mercenaries, and then use these mercenary armies to do the work that the regular forces won't do because they say, hey, that's not right. And so they're using it as a kind of recruiting system. And they take the most dangerous psychopathic people and they put them in these private mercenary companies and give them huge payoffs to do, criminal stuff. And so we really need to get, again, right to the top of the system. And we need to really start by totally revamping the top and then making it open to the entire world public to see. Then these people down below doing bad things, light is what fights darkness. You need to shine a light on them. We need to shine the light of truth on them. And then suddenly everyone will say, what are you doing? Even their mothers will call them and say, what are you doing? And they'll stop that. And it'll all change.
Well, it will, and that's one thing. If you've ever lived in a place that had cockroaches, you turn on the light at night and you watch them scatter.
Exactly.
They run for the shadows, and you better be quick. You'll be lucky if you can get stamp on one, much less two.
And here's the important thing to understand is that they live in the shadows. They cannot come out in the open and admit it because then they were weak. Because they are weak, they need secrecy. Because they are weak, they need to hide, they need to lie. Because if they said out front, we're going to go into the Middle East, we're going to murder innocent civilians, we're going to kill intellectuals, and we're going to steal oil, nobody would support them. So they say, oh no, we have weapons of mass destruction, we have this bad dictator we've got to deal with, we're fighting bad guys. So they put out lies because if people knew the truth, they wouldn't go along with it. And the truth is getting out. The internet has helped. And here again, you can see that there are a lot of people in the agencies, in the military-industrial complex, who are helping us. The NSA, the people who are supposed to be listening in on everything, they could stop something like this radio show or my blog. Instead, they're putting it out there like a new Gutenberg press, trying to help the people. So there is a huge group inside the military-industrial complex who are the good guys, who are fighting on our behalf, who are letting the truth come out, and they're winning. You can see that in so many ways. It's a frustratingly slow process, but it's happening, and we're down to just a few trouble spots, I think.
Well, you're right about a couple of things. We are seeing some progress. I mean, I was in a restaurant in Anderson, California, about 3 weeks ago, and Anderson, California is about 8 miles south of Redding. Redding is a town of about 50, 60,000 people. Anderson's maybe 3,500 people, okay? Middle of nowhere. And the guy behind me is talking about the Federal Reserve System and how this planet is controlled by reptilians. So, I don't know how legitimate the reptilian thing is. I pay attention to it. I listen. But the fact that people in small towns in rural America are beginning to have these discussions. I just overheard it at a table I was at.
Well, the reptilian thing, I think it works very well as a metaphor. I've said this before, but our brain is structured like an onion. And the oldest layer, it's known as the reptilian brain, is directly connected to our sense of smell. And it says, do I eat it? Do I fuck it? Do I fight it? Or do I run? And the basic operating system is me first, everything else later. And people operating at that level are at the top, and they are in power. Whereas, most people have what's known as the monkey brain, which is a social brain. How are we going to get along nicely together? Is this going to hurt that person's interests? They think about other people, not just themselves. Unfortunately, at the very top, we have psychopaths who only think about themselves and their own personal greed and their own personal advancement. And so I would say that as a metaphor, the reptilian thing works. But I've met many of these so-called reptilians in person. And as far as I can tell, they look like, normal human beings. The other thing is that what you can say for sure is that these people are born into a family nexus, which is intergenerational and has a multi-generational plot. And so people born in there are indoctrinated in a certain way. And if they go against the whole family thing, they're killed. So they're kind of slaves to their own system. So in a way, it's like a multi-generational artificial intelligence that runs on human minds, you know, and that's this whole family nexus. They're born into it, they're indoctrinated with certain books, they're trained to act in certain ways, and it goes beyond the individual. We're dealing with a collective now, collective group mind. This is the pyramid. This is the eye of the pyramid. So that is what we're dealing with. But the weak spot, like I say, is that it's very, very highly centralized. We have to go to the very top controllers, and then if you can change them, then everything below them, they're used to obeying orders. They will change. So that's why I keep saying, don't go after the men in black. You need to go for the very top people. We need to identify them. We need to get to them. And that's what I've been trying to do myself. That's why I went to see David Rockefeller. That's why I went to Italy to try to meet the P2. I'm trying to talk to the actual people in charge. And I've done that with the people in Asia, too. And I think a consensus is being built up. And we're almost there. It's just the resistance is still from now... Wow, the same old characters. I mean, you know, and I'm hoping we're going to hear from them. I think they understand now that they cannot possibly win. They're what's happened, what's really undone them is the fact that their illusion of money is being broken. Their illusion of that they can create money out of nothing is not working. That's why you have negative interest rates and still people aren't borrowing. Because they know that they're entering into a slave contract. They're not actually getting anything except a small reward in order for agreeing to become a debt slave. And instead, people are concentrating on real value. And this is especially true of the Asians, the reason why they won this financial war, and they have won it, is because they say, we're not going to buy anything financial. We only buy things that really exist. Real estate, factories.
Hard assets, yeah.
Hard assets, stuff that actually is real, not paper with funny stories.
That's what I've been recommending to people. I said, instead of, you know, investing in stocks and bonds, go out and buy yourself a cat, backhoe and front loader, a truck and a dump truck and a trailer. Just leave it sit in your backyard. It's a hard asset. Whenever the economy collapses, you can still move dirt. You can still do something people want you to do.
Yes, exactly, and that's what's happening, and that's why, you know, right now, there's still lies being put out there. The lies are that the U.S. is the world's number one economy, and that China's number two. That is so totally wrong. China produces 11 times more steel than the U.S. In the past 3 years, they poured more concrete than the United States did during the entire 20th century. They also have all the computer high-tech industry now. They control world trade, so they have the real world economy now. And what the United States has as their final bargaining card is still by far the world's strongest military industrial complex. And the Asians are saying, "Good, we'll keep financing the military industrial complex, but let's use it for the benefit of the planet. Let's do it so that everybody wins." And a lot of people in the military-industrial complex get this and agree, but what's happening is the remaining Khazarian mob leaders are saying, "Oh, you know, we're going to become Chinese slaves. We've got to fight them. You know, it's the Chinese are the bad guys. You know, we've got to contain them. We've got to fight them." Well, no, we've got to work with them. They're offering us partnership. They're offering us a world peace, and you know, we do at some level need some sort of world government. I know that this is a big sort of bugbear among a lot of people, but hear me out. It's not a centralized new world order fascist control grid. What we're saying is that we need an international society what exists already in every village. That is, you don't go take a dump on the street, you don't kill people, you don't go into people's houses and steal stuff, and we need the international ability to stop the same thing. We need to say, no, you're not going to go invade Iraq and steal all their oil and murder, you know, a large percentage of their population. You can't do that. That's a crime. We need to be able to stop this. And we need to be able to have these international criminals who operate above the law, operate underneath the law. You know, World problems need to be solved through discussions, court cases, or possibly even, ritual warfare, like a sports tournament or something, but not through mass killing. Industrial mechanized mass murders is what is going on now still in some parts of the Middle East and elsewhere. But it's really, really down a lot. We're almost at world peace. Despite all the trouble they're trying to cause, they're not being able to start World War III. They've failed. They couldn't do it with Iran. They couldn't do it with North Korea. They couldn't do it with the Soviet Union when it happened. And they're not ever going to be able to do it. And we've got to stop them from even being able to try to start it now.
So really what you're looking at is just a, really regional sovereignty, national sovereignty, but just a set of rules that every country has to live by that's got teeth in it. I mean, that's the thing about the UN. It's a paper tiger.
Exactly.
Whenever you have, countries that put up their own military forces, you can't serve two masters. If there was a replacement for the UN, it would need to have its own military force, its own police force, its own court systems that aren't already pre the deck is pre-stacked by these oligarchs that run the world now.
Well, that's what the Asians have said. Look, the Pentagon can become the core of a planetary protection force. It's a meritocratic organization. It has its problems, but it's run by talent. And anybody, any farm boy from Illinois or whatever can climb to the top if he's good enough. And they say, all right, we'll use that as a core of a planetary protection agency, and we'll continue financing it, but we've got to, stop all the killing everywhere and put an end to these international criminals. And then the big Khazarian mercenary armies can be dealt with, and they are being dealt with, but we need to do more. When that happens, it's game over. We're almost there. I'm sure of it. We're really close. Very few of these people now in power. I think, stopping Hillary Clinton from getting into power is an important priority because she's part of that whole group. Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel has to be dealt with because he's a psychopathic murderer. There's a few people that still have to be dealt with, but overall, the balance has shifted and the good guys are winning. There's no denying it. You just need that final push. We're almost there.
Okay. Speaking of things in Israel, I was in Los Angeles last weekend, and I was staying in West Covina at just a small, chain hotel, Comfort Inn, one of those, mid-range type thing. And in the hotel with me was, I didn't realize this the first day, but the second day it became painfully clear. I kept seeing these kids, young kids, 16, 17, 18 years old, high school kids, wearing these T-shirts that says, "This is what a Zionist looks like." And so I asked one of them, I said, what's to do with these T-shirts? What's this whole group? I said, oh, we're all going to Israel to serve in the IDF. The Israelis came over. They came to our high school. They made the pitch. They've recruited us. We're going over to be trained to be members of the IDF. We're going to serve 2 years, and then we'll have both Israeli as well as American citizenship, and then we can go to college because we'll have college scholarship money. And I thought to myself, if the Israelis are so desperate, they have to come over to the United States and recruit high school kids, seniors and recent graduates to come over and serve in their military. They're really bad. That's a bad statement that you can't fund your own military or staff your own military from your own population.
Okay. Well, that whole issue is something I need to touch on a bit more. But that it's quite it's historically known that the Balfour Declaration, in which the British agreed to a Jewish homeland in Israel, was sent to a member of the Rothschild family. The Rothschilds consider themselves the kings of Israel and the kings of the Jews, and they wanted to establish a world government based in Israel, run by their clan, with them as the kings of the world. And that, they seem to believe, was some kind of divine destiny, that they were a chosen people, that it was their destiny to rule over the world and enslave everybody else. And that's just not true, okay? They're not the chosen people. God does not choose a people, you know? We're all chosen by the very fact that we exist, you know? That proves that we were created by nature and we still survived after all these billions of years of evolution, but that's not going to happen. The people of Israel need to understand that they're a bunch of Europeans who've been brainwashed into thinking that they came from a country called Judea that existed 3,500 years ago, which is totally not related to their genetic background. I mean, this whole delusion needs to be dealt with, and that can only be dealt with through truth. Archaeological truth, historical truth. We need to re-educate these people. They've been the most brainwashed people in the history of the universe, and they are seriously a big source of all the problems of the world. And my own investigation shows that above them are these P2 Freemason One World Fascist Government groups who control them, use them as their slave people.
Well, the next question then is, you know, is there anybody, anything above the P2 memberships? Members?
Well, I mean, again, there is a creator, and because the proof is the creation. We didn't create ourselves. Something else.
That is true. That is absolutely true. But back.
And I think that we can enhance the creation. That's the answer. I don't think that we're going to expect some kind. Well, there has been some sort of divine intervention. We saw the lightning strike the Vatican.
Yeah, I saw that.
A lot of weird stuff has been happening, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, we're supposed to deal with this ourselves, you know, we need to, like, again, instead of waiting for a creator or anything else, we're obviously in charge of the planet now. We need to turn it into a paradise ourselves. We've inherited the creation from the creator. We have the ability now to run this planet, control this planet. And that means we have responsibility to do a good job. And we're not doing that right now. We have the ability to either destroy the rainforest or build them up, you know. We have the ability to make peace or make war. It's, you know, we've got to make sure we make all the right choices. And again, I think that means an organized future planning function that everybody can participate in, that's transparent, and it's run by the best people on the planet as part of the solution, not the total solution. And again, I've been pushing a massive campaign to end poverty and stop environmental destruction. I think if we have the political will, that can be done within literally a matter of months. Most disease can also be eliminated within months if we have the political will.
If you were going to prioritize these things, what would you prioritize first? You know, my choice would be environmental destruction. We don't stop that, none of us are going to be alive.
Absolutely. I think that all destruction of ecosystems has to stop immediately, and that the poor third world farmers who are burning down jungles to feed their families have to be given other opportunities that don't involve burning down virgin rainforests.
Well, that's what goes on in Indonesia every year. I mean, I've been in Singapore when Indonesia lights their half their country on fire to burn down the rainforest, and the conditions in Singapore are terrible because you can't breathe the air because of all the smoke that's been put up. It's a terrible thing.
Yes, to create these palm oil plantations again. Yeah, if necessary, we'd have to threaten to declare war on Indonesia unless they stop that. You know, this is the sort of thing where you think, hey, you're destroying something precious that belongs to the entire planet for the sake of the profit of a few individuals, that has to stop. You know, you're wiping out precious species that have existed since the beginning of time, or have evolved since the beginning of time, and they'll be gone forever unless you stop what you're doing. So yeah, at a certain point, you have to actually. That's where you can actually have a legitimate use of military power to stop destruction of the nature. And again, if people are being killed or enslaved or starved, again, we have to stop them through force if no other means is available. And that's where I think Chinese, U.S., Russian military cooperation is the key. If we can get an agreement among the Chinese, the Russians, and the American military to coordinate, we can do it. We can have world peace. We can stop environmental destruction. We can end poverty. It's all can be done. And we have to, we have a few people who are trying to stop this. They're still trying to turn Putin into a boogeyman. They're still trying to say the Chinese are the enemy. They're trying to manipulate us into fighting each other because that's how they've controlled it. We got to say, no, we're not going to fight each other on behalf of hidden controllers using lies and propaganda and racist, hate-filled ideology. That cannot be allowed to continue.
Well, if we do the things you're proposing and suggesting here, the future for mankind looks pretty bright. And one of my great disappointments in my lifetime is, I grew up, I was born in '54. I grew up during the time of launching Redstone rockets as a prelude to Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and then the U.S. dropped the ball. I mean, absolutely dropped the ball on the space program. And now we don't even have a shuttle. We're buying rockets from rocket engines from the Russians, and we don't have an official space program. But there's rumors out there that we've got a black space program. Any insight on that?
I personally have not been able to go to the local rocket station and take a rocket to another planet, a spaceship to another planet. I've met people. People have come to my talks. There's one guy who comes who says that he worked on terraforming Mars. And other than that, he seemed to be totally sane and normal. Another guy I've talked to says he came from the Pleiades and somehow he found himself on this planet. But again, he seems to be sane other than that. I think that if this is a virtual scenario simulation, that then my understanding is that there have been many simulations that have taken place, some involving enormous expansion out into the universe, and that we're now at a point where we're trying to reset the whole thing for what will be the evolutionary equivalent of a nuclear explosion, of a Cambrian, fundamental change, where everything's going to go to a whole new level of existence. We're headed for a new Cambrian explosion, and that's why all these different simulations have been stopped. People have been brought back from different realities to this particular time and place, because we're here to make sure the initial conditions are exactly right for what's going to be the biggest evolutionary change on this planet since the Cambrian explosion. Now, the Cambrian explosion, for those of you who don't know, is this: that for about 3.5 billion years, life on this planet could only be seen with the microscope. Most you could see with the bare eye would be like brown sludge or something. And suddenly, in evolutionary terms, the blink of an eye, about 500 million years ago, we got these giant beings, big fish and all that kind of sea life and other things that was a trillion times bigger than anything that existed before. And I believe we can accomplish the same thing now, where we could have an almost infinite amount of planets with humans on them, with not billions, but trillions or quadrillions of human beings all over the universe, living in harmony with nature, creating wonders we cannot even imagine today. We have that potential. We can make this happen. I'm sure we can do it. We have the technical ability. What's the problem is our political, social infrastructure is not up to the job. It needs to be revamped according to current best practices on all levels. That's what will trigger this. I'm sure we can do it. I know that very realistically we can end poverty, stop environmental destruction within a period of months. We can then have exponential economic growth where everybody is going to live in the equivalent of a mansion with their own swimming pool and have a high-paying, rewarding job. We can make this happen. These are the goals we need to set ourselves. No, we need to make it happen.
Well, one thing I learned about having a big house with a swimming pool, it's a lot of work to keep it up.
Well, okay, a small house with a swimming pool.
I'm just
saying. I know what you're saying. I mean, bigger is not necessarily better, but even like a comfortable apartment building with a share a gym and swimming pool and a garden area. It's the sort of thing that you can realistically supply to every human being on Earth. Comfortable living in harmony with nature, high population density in conjunction with virgin and expanding nature is possible. We can make this happen. It's not, you know, the whole old paradigm of we have to destroy and exploit nature and turn it into products is a failed model. You need to reboot the system. I can't say this often enough. And, you know, we can make it happen. We just have a few of these fanatics to deal with, and then it will happen.
Well, you know, the sooner we get on with this, dealing with these fanatics, the better. I really hope that your contact gives you good news about the...
I hope so, too. If not, you know, we're all going to have to call our own personal military contacts, take personal action. It's no longer you're going to wait for somebody to do something. Hold on a second.
Hey, I hear a dog.
Dogs are up. Something.
Anyway, you folks, you've heard the message today. It's a good message. It's an uplifting message. It's an enlightened message. You know, like we're talking about, we have to do this ourselves.
Yeah, and so if I don't get the answer I'm hoping for, I will take action. I will call the people I know and ask them to take action. I'd like you to do the same. We can make this viral. It's, you know, everybody can do what they personally can do. And I'm still hoping that General Dunford and the Joint Chiefs of Staff are ready now to actually do what needs to be done, create this Star Trek world of meritocracy where we can go where no man has gone before, you know, explore the universe, turn this planet into a paradise. We've got, there's things that we all agree upon, and we start with that, and that should be enough.
Well, we should. I don't know anybody alive who would disagree with the charting that is the path as a course for mankind, for humanity going forward. I don't know anyone alive. I don't understand why we've been stuck in the mud here of war and violence and poverty for so long. I don't get it. You know, I just
because
don't get it.
Certain people say it's got to be me, and otherwise it's my way or the highway.
Well, we need to eliminate those problems and roadblocks. Yeah. Hey Ben, we're out of time.
Okay. Anyway, I'm optimistic. We're gonna turn this planet into a paradise. Let's do it. Okay, that's my final word.
There we go. Hey Ben, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. I know it's getting up early for you doing a live one. Thank you so much.
No problem. You have a nice day.
Hey, you too. Thanks. We'll talk later.